It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to the Field Goals Podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz, and joining me to talk about the Seahawks' second loss of the season as they fall 30-16 to the Baltimore Ravens. Two losses at home now. I'm joined by SeahawksDraftBlog.com's Rob Staton. Rob, how you doing?
I would feel a lot better, Brandon, if the Seahawks had played a lot better today. And I think that it was a revealing loss. You know, I think we've been, even with the team at 5-1, and they certainly deserve some credit to get to 5-1 in the first place. It's not easy to win five games to start a season like that. And it was the best start to a season they'd had since the Super Bowl year in 2013. I do think that we were still waiting to find out exactly where this team was going and the direction they were heading and where they are right now in this sort of modest rebuild that they've had over the last couple of seasons. And sadly, I think today's game, as well as the Saints game, has pulled the curtain back on where they really are, which is that there's a lot of work still to do.
Well, there's a lot of work to do on defense in particular. But, you know, when I look at the score, is it as easy to say, look, the Ravens scored 30 points. They win by two touchdowns. The Seahawks gave up two touchdowns on offense, one with the pick six by Russell Wilson and the DK Metcalf fumble returned for a touchdown for the Ravens. I mean, ultimately, it was the difference in the game. But do you feel like there's more to it?
Yeah, I do think there's more to it. I think it certainly wouldn't be unfair to look at the pick six and say that that was a huge momentum change in the game, because the Seahawks had started that drive at their 45-yard line. They'd got decent field position in the first place. Then there was a personal foul penalty against the Ravens, and the Seahawks kind of started on midfield. They were leading 10-6. They were driving. It was a third and six, I think, throw that Wilson was picked off, and then it led to the interception for a touchdown. And, you know, it felt like as that drive was progressing that they were going to score, they were going to go up 17-6, that this was going to be the thing that Seahawks fans have been hoping for, which was a fairly straightforward home victory. And they looked like a team that was 5-1 at that time, right up until the point of the pick six. Yeah. But what I would say about that is that off the back of that, Russell Wilson then led, I think it was something like a 79-yard drive or something like that. You know, maybe not 79, maybe sort of a 60, 70-yard drive to get them into field goal range. And they kicked a field goal, and at halftime it was 13-0. And the Seahawks started with possession at the start of the second half. So any kind of momentum swing was kind of snatched back with a subsequent drive, and then they started level after half time. And it was that second half performance that really bothered me, because it just felt like the Ravens imposed their will on the Seahawks, which is what the Saints did. You know, the Ravens dominated both lines of scrimmage. They harassed Russell Wilson. They loaded the box and said to the Seahawks, you are not going to be able to run today. And the Seahawks, who were a team that wants to be able to run and pride themselves, and Pete Carroll speaks about running the ball, reacted to the Ravens stacking the box by saying, we better throw the ball a bit more because that's what they're showing. And at one point with the game, I think it was still tied at the time, the Seahawks had thrown 27 times and run 16 times. So the Ravens were dictating to the Seahawks their offensive game plan, which is not the way that this team is set up. They want to be the bully. They want to be the team that's imposing themselves on the opponent. And then on the other side of the ball, you know, the Seattle's defensive line really had no answer to Lamar Jackson. You have to give Jackson credit. He was scrambling around. He's incredibly difficult when he gets into space in that second level. He's probably a 4-3 runner himself. And he's got incredible agility, and he sort of cuts and he changes direction very well to go with the speed. He is physical. He was like that at Louisville as well in college. So he's very difficult to bring down. But there was no answer there. There was no real pressure. Once again, there was only one sack, and I think that's when Jackson fell over and Brandon Jackson kind of just touched him down. Right. You know, the defensive line is not playing well at all. It's then exposing the linebackers, who are supposed to be the strength of the defense, and they're getting exposed because the defensive line's not doing a good enough job. And then it's kind of this ripple effect, and then the secondary's being exposed because the front seven's not good enough. So the whole defensive unit looks like a bottom third unit in the NFL. And if you are a team that's looking at the Seahawks right now, and sorry to go on this kind of like this long point that I'm making here. I'll finish in a sec. But the point is that if you look at the Seahawks, if you're an opponent, you say, take away the running game and get a little bit of pressure on Russell Wilson, they're going to struggle to beat teams that are as good as the Ravens and the Saints because the defense can't compensate. And in the past, you know, in 2013, 2014, if the offense played a game like this, you can rely on the defense to keep things tight so that the offense could have a chance to make amends later on. But in this game, that wasn't happening. And then, you know, again, it's a Carroll feature. He preaches explosive plays, the importance of explosive plays and turnovers and running the ball. The Ravens ran the ball, took away the run. The Ravens had explosive plays in the running game with Jackson and the passing game with Jackson. And they had two turnovers that led to touchdowns. The Seahawks had none of that.
All right, Rob. Well, I think in that long-winded answer, you covered all the topics. We can go ahead and close it out here.
But it's one of those days.
you got to get it all out. And I feel frustrated too because, you know, I knew going into this game I was going to be frustrated by Lamar Jackson. And it was. It was frustrating to watch in certain situations where you knew he was just going to take off with the ball and it seemed like there was nobody there. But then I look at his stat line, Rob, and I see of 9 of 20 for 143 yards through the air. You know, that's not particularly great for a stat line. His rushing yards, 14 attempts, 116 yards. If I would have known they would have gotten that in, you know, paired with his passing stat line, I probably would have taken that at the start of the day. It's just that, yeah, I think I do put a lot of this on the Seahawks defense. And earlier on this week, I had on Adam Nathan and we talked about just how we'd rank out the different position groups, and the linebackers were the last one off the board. And I don't know if it's because of the defensive line or if it's just because of the aging linebackers or because of the ability of other teams to scheme up the linebackers based on Pete's wanting to keep the base defense on the field for the primary portion of the game. I think it made sense against the Ravens in particular because, you know, they do tend to run so frequently. So that would have made sense to me. But the stat line with Jackson, I would have taken that. The stat line with Mark Andrews with his two receptions for 39 yards with I don't know how many drops he had, 3 or 4 on the day. I would have taken that. No Hollywood Brown in this game. Holy smokes. It was all set up for the Seahawks to be in position to, you know, to have this game work out so well. They get the early touchdown and they're up 10-6. And yeah, it just all shifted on that pick six.
Yeah, look, I mean, there's some fair points in there. I mean, what I will say about Jackson's stat line is there was 3 drops by Mark Andrews. So if he gets those catches, you know, his day ends up looking like 12 of 20 passing, you know, probably about 170 yards and then 116 yards rushing. I mean, that's a great day. I mean, they ran for 200 yards. They ran for 199 yards as a team, which is, you know, any team that runs for 200 yards is often going to win the game.
Yeah, and averaging 5.7 yards a carry, too.
Yeah, and I just think with there are definitely issues with the defense. I mean, the defensive line has regressed. You know, they've lost. Frank Clark had flaws, but Frank Clark got to the quarterback, and you can rely on him to do that. And I don't think they've got anybody at the moment they can rely on to get to the quarterback. That's just not happening. That's not, you know, Jadeveon Clowney, teams are zoning in on him. He's been double teamed. You know, people are saying he's the key. You're going to take him away. And he's never been, you know, a sort of that speed rusher that Frank could be, and that explosive edge rusher that could still make those plays happen. When you look inside, you know, this is Jaron Reed's first game, so we're going to have to give him a bit of a chance to get back, but there's just not enough there. And I think it's an interesting question with the linebackers, because I don't know whether it is the defensive line that is completely to blame for this or not. I mean, Bobby Wagner's had 2 great years when he had Jaron Reed with his 10.5 sacks last year, you know, playing really well in the middle. And the year before when Sheldon Richardson was there, Bobby Wagner's had great years. When the defensive line is poor like it is this year, Bobby Wagner just doesn't look anywhere near the same. I mean, it's very hard to watch Bobby Wagner. I know it's kind of, people are very wary of criticizing Bobby because he is such a legendary player and he's just been paid. But when you're actually watching him out there at the moment, it's hard to sort of see him and then look at the way Luke Kuechly's playing and make the case that he is the number one linebacker in the league. He definitely was the last couple of years, but right now he's not playing that way. KJ Wright has sort of fits and starts, and Kendricks is just not having the impact that we all hoped. Now, again, is it the D-line? Is it the linebackers? But I do think there's kind of a ripple effect there. I just don't think the defensive line is good enough. It's not stopping the run. It's not creating pressure. They seem to be so focused as a game plan on stopping the opponent's running game that it does sort of limit their ability to rush the passer, and yet they're not stopping the running games. At least they haven't in the last couple of weeks. But I, you know, just sort of to change to finish this latest rant, I think that the the offensive side of things does warrant some blame, because again, you know, all the Ravens did today was stack the box and say, you are not running the ball. Mm-hmm. And the Seahawks' response to that was to go against everything that they set out to be, which is to run the ball and to be balanced. They were lopsided. That was as lopsided an offensive game plan as we've seen since Chicago of week two last year, when they were throwing and throwing and throwing. They just practically, you know, they didn't abandon the run, but it was a side issue. They just threw all the time. And that was because the Ravens dictated to the Seahawks that they were going to throw, because they were winning at the line of scrimmage, because they were stacking the box, and the Seahawks did not have an answer. And for me, I'm kind of coming off this game and I'm sort of thinking, right, where are the Seahawks right now? An inconsistent offense with a magical quarterback who is going to win them games this year and will continue to win games, and there will be exciting wins. They've won five games. They will win some more, mainly because of Russell Wilson. And they will be able to run some weeks and they won't be able to run others. But they are completely reliant on this quarterback. And then I look at the weapons that he's actually got. Tyler Lockett's great. DK Metcalf's very inconsistent. Mm-hmm. He has fantastic plays. He has bad plays. He's lost Will Disley now, so he's lost a huge weapon there. He was kind of taking the production that Doug Baldwin was providing. And then you've got Jaron Brown and you've got David Moore. And I look at that and I think, oh, man, they've got to help Russell out more here. You know, there's 8 days to the trade deadline. If they want to improve and they want to take a step forward, they ain't going to be able to trade for anybody on defense right now that's going to improve this unit. There just isn't that guy out there. This needs a quite a significant rebuild, I think, in the offseason. But they can go out and get an offensive weapon to make up for the loss of Disley. And I think they've got to do that.
You know, Rob, I feel like they have what they need on offense. So if they were to add another piece on offense, like O.J. Howard, for instance, we've talked about him. I don't know if that's the piece. I don't know if there's another guy out there who you could add at tight end that would kind of round out the offense. It just doesn't. It seems to me that you would be addressing an area of strength more so than an area of weakness, because I feel like the weakness is on the defensive side of the ball. Although, you know, I could say I could especially point to on offense, because right before the 53-yard field goal, you know, they had it. What was it? 4th and 2. Maybe it was 4th and 3, but those types of situations where you're kind of in position to where you could go for it or decide to kick the field goal. You know, we haven't seen Myers make a lot of those kicks this year. And the thing that it tells me is that what I'm seeing now with the inability to kind of run the ball when the Ravens are stacking the box and also not going for it on, and or even not being able to pick it up when you have a 3rd and 1, 3rd and 2, 4th and 1, there doesn't seem to be a lot of trust with the group up front in those short yardage situations.
Yeah, I completely 100% agree with you that the biggest needs are on defense. But unfortunately, I kind of just look at the landscape right now and the names that are being linked. And on defense, you're seeing people like Vic Beasley being touted as a trade. And I'm thinking, is Vic Beasley going to change the fortunes of the Seahawks defense? I have a hard time believing that. Yeah. And then Leonard Williams at the Jets, they're apparently willing to give him away and nobody seems to be that interested. I just don't see him changing anything. And you know, Jalen Ramsey was, you know, a genuine elite player. You know, if they felt that they needed to go and make a big splash on defense, then that was an option. But clearly they didn't want to go down that road, and he's gone to LA instead. And then I actually look at the offensive names and I kind of think, well, the Seahawks are who they are this year. You know, they're a team that is dependent on the quarterback and occasionally the running game, but mainly the quarterback. And he's lost one of his best weapons in Will Disley. So if they when you see AJ Green being linked and you see OJ Howard and Hooper in Atlanta and one or two other offensive players that are being linked as possibilities, and there's Tyler Eifert and people like that, I just think, and it doesn't have to be like I'm not saying it has to be a first round pick or a second round pick. I kind of feel like they need to go and just do something to say to Wilson, You're the guy this year. You know, our fate lies with you. If we're going to have a good season, it's kind of up to you, my man. We're going to try and make your life a little bit easier here while we still can do something. Because to me, on a day like this, they were completely dependent on the quarterback. And you know, Lamar Jackson was able to do his thing and Russell wasn't. And I kind of felt sorry for Russell. The running game had been taken away. And his main weapon is Tyler Lockett. And aside from that, he's got a rookie it was inconsistent, and Jaron Brown and David Moore. But you're right, the main issues are on the defense. I mean, this is a flawed team. It's been a flawed team since week one. It's nowhere near where they want it to be. We will know that this team is where it needs to be and where it wants to be when they are running the ball with greater consistency and the defense is not in the bottom third. That it's actually a top 15 at least unit who can create pressure, that can take away the running game and can force turnovers. And it's just not doing any of those things. And my fear, Brandon, is that there are going to be at least another game or two like this year. They've still got to play the Niners twice. They've got to play the Rams again. Sure. That there are teams that will look at the Seahawks and say, we can get after them, that we can impose our will on them, that we can be the bully against them. And it's the Seahawks who want to be the bully. And if you listen, they're 12-8 at home since 2017. I mean, what's happened to CenturyLink Field? Where's that great home field advantage gone?
You could put it on the fans and say, where has the home field advantage gone? But in these rainy day games, well, for one, we have a team that is in Seattle and plays in the rain. And for some reason, they're having a hard time playing in the rain because they're giving up plays on special teams. They're giving up big plays on defense. I look back at the Saints game and I look at this game and I can't really say, yeah, well, the defense, they played well enough. But if you give up two turnovers for touchdowns, yeah, you're going to lose. Going up against the Saints, they give up special teams points. You know, there's no margin for error. And so I can't see pointing the blame at home field advantage for these two losses.
Yeah, definitely. That wasn't my intention. I mean, I'm not saying it's down to the fans or the environment or anything like that. I just wonder. We're all so used to the Seahawks being great at home and winning at home, and even when they didn't have teams that are even as good as this one, really, or certainly the previous years, they were always good at home. Now, even during the Super Bowl years, there was always one game, wasn't there? It was usually against Bruce Arians and the Cardinals.
Well, you can even wonder if it's a defense versus offense thing, but I think back to the Mike Holmgren years, and that was an offensive football team. The defenses were mediocre, and they always, you know, were consistently, you know, 7-1, 6-2 in those home stretches too.
Yeah, and that's all I'm kind of wondering here is that why? I mean, they were 6-2 last year. The year before they were 4-4. Now they're 2-2, and I just kind of wonder what is it? You know, why are they not winning more games at home? You know, that was always kind of the reliant thing that you could say, well, we can rely on the Seahawks to probably win 7, maybe even 8 games at home because of the great home field advantage and the noise and everything, and the benefits that come with that. And then you could sort of, you'd look at the road schedule and say, okay, where are your sort of 2 or 3 wins here to go with the great wins that you're going to get at home to get this team into the playoffs? And where could you maybe pinch an extra game or two to win a first round bye in the playoffs? Whereas like now you kind of look at it, they're unbeaten on the road. And at home, they're 2-2. And the two losses have been shellackings. And the two wins were against the winless Bengals team by a point. And then, you know, the Rams game, which was a fantastic, exciting game, but could easily have, you know, it was a coin toss at the end, whether that kick sneaks inside or goes on the other side of the post. So I just wonder why they aren't winning more at home. I don't know what the answer is.
Turnovers. I know the answer. It's turnovers, Rob. They keep turning the ball over more than they get the football.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of issues, and that in itself is, you know, indicative of them not being where they need to be, because, you know, last year they did such a good job, didn't they, with the lack of turnovers. You know, they nearly broke the record, didn't they, for the season with the lack of the small number of turnovers they had last year.
Yeah.
And then that's completely gone this year. It's turnover here, turnover there. You know, it's a turnover every week. Some really back-breaking ones that have either been touchdowns like today, or they've been returned to the 5-yard line or whatever and given great field position to an opponent. There have been far too many, and that's a Carroll staple. And another Carroll staple is not giving up big plays on defense, which they're doing. Another Carroll staple is turning the ball over on defense, which they're not doing. And running the ball consistently, which they're not doing. So there's a lot of work to do. I felt at the start of the year that they were going to be 10-6 and that the next offseason was going to be the big offseason with a haul of picks and a bit of cap money to spend, that they could really do some good business in the next offseason. And I hate to say it, but I kind of think that's about right. I think that they could still get up to 10 wins, 11 wins quite easily, but I still think that, you know, when it actually matters, they're going to come up against an opponent possibly like not the Ravens, obviously, because they're in the AFC, but the Saints or the 49ers or the Rams. And we may well see a game like this in an important game, unfortunately.
And there are some important games coming up on the schedule. So let's look ahead to what some of those big games might be coming up after the break. I'm joined by Rob Staton of SeahawksDraftBlog.com, and we're looking ahead to the Seahawks' next few games on the schedule. They have a get-right game now coming up against the Falcons on Sunday. Everybody seems to be able to beat them on the road. So, and it looked like Matt Ryan went out with an injury. I don't know what his status is going to be going into this coming Sunday. So then they come back home and they have the Bucs. Gosh, you hope that they're able to get back on track at home with a game like that. But then I look at that stretch, Rob, where they play the 49ers down in Santa Clara. Then they have the bye week, and then they go on the road to Philly, come back home for Monday night against the Vikings, and then their second game against the Rams. So that could be a really tough stretch of games right there, those four games.
Yeah, it really could. And, you know, it could be the complete opposite of what we've seen sometimes in the past when the Seahawks really hit the straps late in the season. That is such a gauntlet of games that, it's why you kind of looked at a game like today and said, okay, the Ravens, they got hammered by Cleveland. They've beaten bad teams. They haven't really, shown against the good team and had a good quality win yet. And, well, they got that today. And the Seahawks have dropped two home games, playing Teddy Bridgewater. Obviously, that looks like I suppose you could refer to that as a better loss than it seemed at the time, given that the Saints have just won and won and won ever since then. They've gained real momentum, and, Sean Payton's done an amazing job, as has Teddy Bridgewater, because they had no Alvin Kamara as well today to beat the Bears. So, they've done tremendously well. But, the Seahawks are, they could easily win the next two, be 7-2. And then you're kind of thinking, there's a lot of losable games there. And there's
Carroll's teams, they usually play better in the second half, though. Oh, so well, I am kind of feeling, I hope that rings true this year as it has in past years.
But if we're going to have sort of the positive slant on this, I suppose what you could say is they do play the Niners twice. So that's two opportunities to beat them. The other hope is that the Niners, and we see it every year, how often do you see a team that just peaks too early? Mm-hmm. And then it actually comes to the crunch. And you could look at the Cardinals in 2014, went on a fantastic run. Carson Palmer got injured. The Seahawks started, 3-2 or 3-3 or something like that. They ended up winning the division.
Right.
And they caught them up because of the Palmer injury and the Cardinals peaking a little too early. And there's definitely, when you look at the Niners, they have been amazing so far. But they also look a little bit like a team to me that they might just have a rough patch at some point, because it's still, there are still question marks about Jimmy Garoppolo and certain aspects about that team. Kyle Shanahan's coaching his ass off at the moment, but there are definitely some things you think, could see that this is maybe their peak and that they'll come back. And you could see the Rams going either way as well. And, they played the Atlanta today, so it's not, you don't get too much of a read on that. They've brought in Jalen Ramsey. So there's a chance there. And if they win those games and if they finish strongly, then they will be in the mix. But the problem is that your Minnesota game at home, your Tampa Bay game at home, your 49ers game at home, even the Cardinals game at home, they all kind of seem like games that could go either way. Mm-hmm. They could be the 1-point win, or it could be the 1-point loss, or it could be a game like today. And it's going to make for an interesting, we'll go into every game. We'll never be bored. We'll go into every game sort of hoping and believing they can win. And some weeks we'll be sat here like we are now, Brandon, feeling a bit down in the dumps and reflecting on a horrible performance. There will also be some exciting, exhilarating wins, and Wilson will continue to produce those wins more often than not. But I think it's just a majorly disappointing thing this week, because this felt like a winnable game. This felt like a chance to keep the momentum going. It felt like it was a chance to have another week of everybody talking about Russell Wilson being the MVP, and all of that's been kind of snatched away. And what we're actually going to hear this week is probably a lot more doom and gloom, and a lot of people second guessing Pete Carroll, and a lot of people like I have today sort of talking about the holes in the team and the flaws. And until they hopefully beat the Falcons next week, we're not going to be able to move on.
Now we just get to hear about how Lamar Jackson is MVP now for the next week, at least, until Russell Wilson can get back out there and have another solid performance.
It's worse than that. Sadly, it's going to be Aaron Rodgers. So
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, we'll have a week of that, I think. And, you know, it's a frustrating feeling. I think it's just that this has been a weird season. It's kind of been a season where, I don't know how you felt at the start of the year, but my personal sort of message on the blog was, don't get your hopes up too high and kind of just enjoy every game. And while also predicting 10-6, which I thought was would be a decent mark this year.
I think I went 11-5 too, and they're still on pace for that. Yeah, it's just, sure. You know, each one of these games, yes, they came out on top and they've been so close, but you talk about the turnover situation, and you look at that Browns game, and they needed every single one of those turnovers to go their way to come out with that win.
Let me put it this way. Let's say instead of being 5-2 right now, let's say they were 4-3
sure.
instead. But the losses were against the Steelers on their own, with Big Ben playing the full game, let's say. Uh-huh. And then they lost the following week to Drew Brees.
Sure.
And then they came back strongly and won the games they were supposed to win, but lost to the Browns team on the road, given what we knew, we were all thinking about the Browns before the season began, that we saw Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry and Nick Chubb and Baker Mayfield and Myles Garrett and the cornerbacks and everything like that. Everybody's a lot of people felt that Cleveland were going to have a really good year. Yeah. So let's say that the three losses, they won today. We'd be sitting here, I think, at 4-3, more positive than we would be at 5-2, having seen them hammered by the Saints and the Ravens at home.
Yeah.
Because kind of what 2-0 and 5-1 did was get everybody's hopes up, and then those hopes were kind of crushed in games that we expected to win. Whereas if we'd have just won the games we were expected to win and lost the games I think a lot of people expected them to lose, they'd be sitting here at 4-3 and we'd be saying, well, this is kind of where we expected them to be, and we always hope that they're going to have a strong end to the season.
Yeah, well, the Seahawks are 5-2. It's fine. And they get to go and play the Falcons next week, gosh, if the Seahawks lose to the Falcons, Rob, what's going on?
Yeah, it will be concerning if they lose to the Falcons, because Matt Ryan picked up an injury today. And if he's not playing and it's Matt Sharp, and given that their season is virtually finished, I mean, I think they're 1-6 now. Dan Quinn may even be fired this week. I mean, we need to wait and see what happens there. They've suffered big injuries to Keanu Neal and to guys on the offensive line. I mean, that will be a very, very serious loss if they lose next week. You would hope that they would win. You would even hope that they beat old buddy Bruce Arians the following week. Tampa Bay looked horrible in London last week, but even that's a game that, you know, Bruce always brings his A game. Right. But if they win the next two and get to 7-2, then you know what, we'll quickly forget about this game, I imagine. But I think it would almost be wrong to do that to an extent, because this is who they're capable of having this happen to them now. We've seen it twice at home. This is who they are. I think it's a way of trying to minimize that moving forward and trying to progress in the second half of the year. And, you know, 8 days to go, I think off the back of this game, they will do something in terms of a trade. I don't know what, but I think they will do something between now and the end of the month.
Let's trade CenturyLink Field for the Old Kingdom. We'll get this team back indoors, and then we can finish it out in just nice weather.
Yeah, every little helps. I need to do something to get this home these home games won a little bit more often.
Well, Rob, really appreciate you coming on, breaking it down. I know if people want to check out some of the college football stuff, especially with the UW Ducks game over the weekend, you were breaking stuff down on the blog. So I know we didn't get to talk much draft stuff, and we didn't get to talk any draft stuff in the show. So if people want to go there, find it, definitely go to SeahawksDraftBlog.com. Anything else coming up that you're writing about?
Well, I think the one thing that usually cheers people up after a game like this is a mock draft. So it may be time to rock out a mock draft this week and do an updated top 50 and try and change people's views away from the game onto something else and take the mind off it for a little bit. So we'll do that. Lots of college football, lots of Seahawks talk on the blog as well. Great community there. So come and join in, and we talk about Seahawks every day.
Who are you leaning toward for your number one right now, Rob?
Number one overall. Yeah. Do you know why it's an interesting one? Because I'm not decided, because Tua Tagovailoa is the guy who most people say number one, but I don't understand why he's become this kind of franchise savior that the Miami Dolphin fans kind of are latching to, and why people have assumed that he will be that. Because I think teams are going to look at him and see left-handed, undersized, a little bit robotic, very talented, very accurate, is doing well, but he gets to play with the most loaded roster in college football at Alabama. And I just wonder if teams will match him up a little bit with Justin Herbert, who had a good win of the weekend, and keep an eye on Joe Burrow, because he is playing very, very well for LSU. And, you know, if he keeps winning and if he can beat Alabama, then he's going to be a hot name.
All right. Well, I'm going to be checking it out to see who you have in your top five for sure, Rob. Check that out. Follow you on Twitter at Rob Staton. And we'll be looking for you again later this season, Rob. Appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Brandon.
Once again, a huge thanks to Rob for coming on the show. And if you haven't yet subscribed to this show, go to sbnation.com/NFL podcasts. If you find value in almost daily Seahawks podcasts and want to help support this effort, you can go to getintheflock.com and we'll give you a shout out on the next episode of the Seahawkers podcast. And be sure to bounce on over to fieldgoals.com. Check out Mookie Alexander's winners and losers from this game. A lot of members of the secondary showing up here, except for Tedrick Thompson, Marquise Blair, Trey Flowers, Shaquille Griffin, all showing up in the plus column. Jadeveon Clowney showing up in the plus column as well. He looked active out there on the field, and that may have been a part of the factor of having Jaron Reed back in the lineup. And scrolling down to the losers column, and scrolling. It's pretty in-depth right there. So you want to check that out. Fieldgoals.com, Mookie Alexander's winners and losers. Jackson Bevins also has his cigar thoughts for Game 7, a recap of the 30-16 victory by the Ravens. And if you want to help contribute to the next show coming up, 3-in, 3-out with Clinton Bonner, we will talk about 3-ins and 3-outs from this game against the Ravens. Follow him on Twitter at Clinton Bon. Use the hashtag 3i3o and tune in to see if your contributions make it into the final show. Stay tuned. Lots more to talk about in this week coming up. And we'll get on out of here. Go Hawks.